It's the True Penny Show at the G1.
Hello and welcome to the True Penny Show. My name is James Trupenny. This is my show, and welcome to our second last preview of the G1 Climax coverage for this year. We're just going to look at Night 18 because it was really important, and we thought it was best to give it its own show because it was a thoroughly entertaining show. And to review it with me today is Christy from Wrestling Sexism. How are you, Mom?
I'm okay.
Good?
Yes, good.
And will you please welcome back after a break from illness and hopefully fully fit and firing on all cylinders, Miss Chelsea Spallin. Shells up. How are you?
I'm feeling much better, thank you. I like that introduction.
That's okay, no problem. Now, before we start on the review, we do have some sad news, and you probably have heard about it already. We had the passing of two great wrestlers in the last couple of days, Jim Neidhart and Doc Dean. Now, Jim Neidhart was one half of the Hart Foundation, one of the revolutionary tag teams of the 1980s, and I think we probably should do an episode on 1980s tag teams sooner rather than later. I was a big fan of Jim because of his work in the Hart Foundation to start with. The feud they had with the British Bulldogs in the WWE in the early 1980s really introduced me to American wrestling, and he was a fantastic tag team wrestler. He was a former football player, and obviously he's widely known these days as the father of Natty Neidhart. He will be sadly missed. Doc Dean, you're less likely to know about, but I think it's important to talk about. Doc Dean came along in an era of British wrestling when it was off TV. He came along just at the end of the 80s, after the ITV deal had finished, and he essentially had a 20-year career just kind of like making his way in a wrestling industry with very little exposure. He was part of a tag team with Robbie Brookside called the Liverpool Lads, and their feud with the Superflies, Ricky Knight, that's Paige's dad, and Jimmy Golden was absolutely astounding. I was very privileged to go see them wrestle each other in Cleethorpes one night. They pretty much invented tag team wrestling in the United Kingdom. It didn't really exist before them in the same way it does now. So the teams like British Strong Style, the great British tag teams like CCK kind of come from that lineage. And he was a very important man in the British wrestling industry, very close friends with Robert Brookside, close friends with Klondike Kate. And so I would like to remember those two fine wrestlers and hope that their families have a peaceful time over the coming week. But now we shall get back to the show. And indeed, the first match was, well, a little bit different, shall we say. Tori Yano and Tama Tonga, 5 minutes and 8 seconds. Tori Yano, ever the spoiler, gets up to 6 points and beats Tama Tonga in his last match in a disqualification match, which was, quite frankly, hilarious. Not quite as hilarious as his match with Kenny, but it was really, really good. Chelsea, what did you think of this?
I really enjoyed this. I thought this was really funny. I don't understand why so many people on the internet get mad about Yano being in the G1, because after so many weeks of, like, high-intensity technical wrestling bouts, you just occasionally need to, like, relax and laugh. I thought this was really, really fun. I got really mad at Tama Tonga when he was trying to choke Yano. Because Yano is an international treasure. I felt like Tama Tonga was a little off his game in this. Like, I think he was trying to enjoy himself, but I feel like I don't really know all the details of the internet controversy that involved, like, littering and sending annoyed tweets to Roman Reigns, but, like, I kind of felt like he seemed like he was a little down while they were doing this, but I still enjoyed it. I mean, it was 5 minutes of comedy, pretty much all the way through.
It was definitely I love Tori Yano, as people well know, and I love Tama Tonga as well for the things he's been doing, just getting heel heat. I understand that people get annoyed with that because it is kind of cheap heat, but equally that's kind of what Bullet Club's supposed to be about. And I, you know, and as Kevin Kelly and Rocky Romero brought up, you know, look at GBH back in the day. They were doing the same thing when Goto won the G1 in 2008. So, you know, it's a little bit different, I think. And people they kind of want New Japan to be above that, but that's kind of what Chaos are about. That's the kind of deal. You know, Chaos are supposed to be the defenders of Strong Style, and that's what they're supposed to go up against, isn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, I also think that Bullet Club, the more visible members of Bullet Club, which is, it's weird that there's, like, two factions of Bullet Club now, but I feel like Bullet Club has in some ways been kind of, like, squeaky clean lately. You know, I think before they kind of took things a little too far, and now they sort of reeled it back in. And I feel like if they're trying to draw a contrast between the Bullet Club OGs and the subsequent generation of Bullet Club, healing up everybody who is from the original Bullet Club is probably a good way to do it.
I think so too. I mean, yeah, the from my point of view, it kind of reminds me of the old NWO when they formed, and they were badasses. That was the whole idea. They came in and they interfered and everything. And then when Eric Bischoff became a member, all of a sudden they kind of became the establishment. They were the guys, you know, they had all the establishment people on their side. And this is kind of what the OGs are talking about. You know, Kenny is the establishment. He has the ear of the office. So is Cody. He's the guy who gets referential treatment, who doesn't have to enter the G1 and gets title shots anyway. This is the kind of thing Bullet Club were born for. You know, they were born for all the frustration Carl Anderson and Fergal Devitt had in their careers, where they thought they were being downplayed because they weren't homegrown talents. So they were both homegrown talents, but the storyline was that they were Gaijins who were fighting against the Japanese system, and that's, you know, this is what Bullet Club's about.
Yeah.
Christy, what did you think of this matchup?
Well, first let me talk about the interference bit, because I think a lot of people really hate it, and I'm one of those people who doesn't. I don't like it. I mean, I'm not supposed to like it. I'm supposed to find it annoying. But I see why they did it. I keep talking about storylines, and I think Tama Tonga wasn't wrestling for stars or great matches. He was wrestling for a storyline. And he was never going to be the top of the B block. If you look at the amazing wrestlers in the B block, he was never going to out-wrestle them. So he had to get attention in some other way. And this was the best way for them. They furthered their storyline, they got their characters across, they distanced themselves from the Bullet Club elite, and Tama Tonga got a lot of attention. Do you think he would have gotten that kind of attention if he'd just wrestled? I don't think so.
No, definitely not. I mean,
probably not.
I mean, Tama's good, but he's not that good. He's not on that elite level. He hasn't been presented as such, so he has to do something. Like he said, making money the only way I know how.
Yeah, he's not going to out-wrestle Ibushi, he's not going to out-wrestle Kenny, he's not going to out-wrestle Ishii, he's not going to out-wrestle Goto, he's not going to out-wrestle how many people on the B block?
Well, all of them except Yano, and to be honest,
and Yano isn't there to wrestle.
No, and Yano out-wrestled him anyway. So, yeah.
So, I think he did the best he could to get himself attention in a very stacked block. So.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think that's fair.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
But both had good G1s, though, overall, I think. You know, Yano, he did his job. He's there to give people a rest and do some entertaining stuff and have some fun. And, you know, you can't have dark all the time, because the G1 is dark. It's, you know, it's stressful. We love it as fans, but from a wrestler's point of view, it's hard work. It's career ending work if you're not careful. Mm-hmm. So you have to have those breaks to make things more interesting.
Yeah. And about this match, I think it worked. It was really fun, and I always enjoy these short matches, comedy matches. The crowd got into it. They actually yelled for the Tongans to be removed, to go away. You know what Tai Chi gets. I'm sorry, Tai Chi, you lost your gimmick.
It wasn't much of a gimmick to start with.
And the referee actually threw Tangaloa out, so at the very end of the tournament, they finally figured it out.
Yeah, it was a nice resolution, I thought, to the tournament for both of them.
Yeah. Can I ask you guys one question? What do you think about Harold Mai being on TV?
Chelsea, do you want to go first?
I sort of don't know how to feel about it. I don't really think I have any evolved thoughts about that. To me, that's kind of a question mark.
I mean, to me, it makes sense. You know, I think I can understand why Japanese fans are unhappy about it, because it's supposed to be, it's not New Japan tradition. But Antonio Inoki used to come out all the blooming time. You couldn't get rid of him. So,
yeah,
to me, it is just like, he's coming out. You have a major threat to the company and the biggest tournament of the year. If he doesn't say anything about it, he looks stupid. So, you know, he's come out, they've made these decisions. I think he probably won't do it again. And I think if it's once, it's fine. I don't want it to be like, you know, general managers on Raw and SmackDown.
You don't want it to be an authority storyline.
No, I don't.
Like
I want it to be like hands off. The theory behind New Japan is the referees let things go, let the guys settle it in the ring, let them have a match. Well, that's really how it should be. Red Shoes should make the decision if anybody should. And if it goes beyond Red Shoes, just do it the once, and that's the message across, and you're done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I saw discussions this morning about that. About are they going to go the way of WWE and stuff like that.
God, I hope not.
I don't want it to go that way either. As long as it's this, and I can still trust New Japan to give clear reports, because I like that New Japan doesn't really give kayfabe injury news notes and stuff like that. I like that I can trust them. As long as it doesn't go that way, I'm okay with a little bit of huddled my.
Yeah, that's okay. Fine by me. Just
I'm tempted to call him Harold Mai because everyone does, but it's not how you pronounce it.
Well, you are Dutch, and he is. Sorry, you are from the Netherlands. I shouldn't say Dutch, should I?
No, Dutch is okay.
Yeah, okay.
So Holland isn't okay.
Holland. Okay, so you're both Dutch. So we will take your word for it. What? How do you pronounce it? And that's how we'll pronounce it from now on.
You can try.
Go on then.
Harold Mai.
Right. We will practice that.
Okay.
Yes. We'll send that to Mike Freeland at the Total Wrestling Writers Podcast, who loves pronouncing things a lot.
We learn something new every day.
There you go. Right, then. We move on to the next match, which was the United States champion versus Never Openweight champion. Kind of a high-stakes match, really, when you've got two champions wrestling against each other. And Jace Robinson gets to 6 points, beats Hirooki Goto 10 minutes and 36 with the kind of the wrap-up of the taped fist storyline. And it was nicely done, I thought. And perfectly pleasant match from both of them, who I enjoy greatly. I do think Juice has done an awesome job, though, this G1. I think he pretty much outshines Hirooki. For me, what did you think, Christy?
Ooh, dangerous to say.
I know.
I love this. I think they have a lot of chemistry. They had a great match at, when was it, in April? A Rota Dontaku, I think it was. And this match was great as well. Maybe not that good, but I think Goto was wrestling injured. Supposedly, I'm not sure if it's real or kayfabe. But I liked it. I like that Juice is such a real baby face. You can see him come out and he's chatting to children and he's giving them his hat, and it's wonderful, and everyone cheers for him, wants to support him. I also love this idea of Juice letting the trainers wrap up his hand and spending a lot of time on that and then just ripping it off the moment he hits the ring. Like, he couldn't have told them, I'm going to take this off, don't even bother. But he didn't care. And I also love this story that they have between him and Goto, because they've wrestled a couple of times now. And Juice is always lost, but he was constantly getting closer and closer to beating Goto. And then this time he finally beat him, but Goto was injured. So what does that mean for them going forward? If Juice is going to challenge Goto, what's going to happen? So I like that they furthered that storyline as well.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun to go forward with those two together, especially as champion versus champion, which is something they haven't done, and it's something they call back on. I think having gone to the final, they'll go in different directions, but it's certainly something it gives. That's what the G1 does. It always gives you options of what you can do next. Chelsea, what did you think of this matchup?
I really enjoyed this. I think Juice has had a great G1. I think he seems so much more over with fans, and he also seems really confident. Like, he seems like he's really enjoying himself right now because he knows he's doing a good job. And I thought this was a really good matchup between the two of them. Goto, when he's in the right frame of mind, can come across as like this, like, I don't know what to call it, like an unstoppable force. Like, he can come across as someone who's really, really hard to get through. And he does a great job of that in this match with Juice, even though he's injured. Like, I think he made Juice work really hard, which was enjoyable. I think the only thing that was a little disappointing to me is they were both pretty tired by this point. So I feel like if they had had this match like 2 days before, it would have been a little bit more a little bit higher energy,
Mosey on the fastball.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, for what it was, I thought it was great. And also, I mean, those guys know that they're not, you know, like the semi-main event for the night, so they're not trying to steal the thunder of everybody that comes after them. So I think this was just enough. Like, it was very well balanced. Like Christy was saying, I enjoyed the story of Juice. It's not really clear whether or not Juice is good enough to beat Goto when Goto's having a really good day. So yeah. They can definitely save that for a pay-per-view to come and then give them both like a barn burner later on, which is also good because Juice has a title. So, you know, maybe Goto will challenge him for that at some point. I don't know.
Well, Goto has a title too, though.
Oh, that's true.
Yes. So I think they'll probably, I don't know. I mean, I think, again, they should probably have another go because it was thoroughly entertaining. It gives them something to do. But
yeah.
I think, having seen the final, I know that they're probably going to go off in different directions, but we'll see.
Mm.
Okay, then. The next matchup, which pretty much did try to steal the show, accidental or not, Tomohiro Ishii defeats Sanada in 17 minutes. Ishii is just a force of nature. He's been an absolute god in this tournament, and 10 points doesn't belie the work that he has done in getting other people over, getting himself over, and probably has a title shot at King of Pro Wrestling coming up, which I am very, very happy about. And I can't wait to see Kenny Omega versus Ishii. That's going to be astounding. But this was thoroughly entertaining and such a good match. And I just, Tomohiro Ishii has just been absolutely amazing. That's not to say Sanada hasn't either. He's really grown in this tournament, but I don't think his growth has been as big as it was in the last tournament or the one before that. He's kind of found his groove. He knows where he wants to go, and he's kind of executing step by step what he needs to do. A bit more reconciliation rather than revolution for Sanada, to quote his old faction in Impact Wrestling. Chelsea, what did you think of this?
Oh my God, this is so good. This is incredible. I totally agree. Ishii has been a god in the G1, and Ishii is one of those guys where I'm sort of like, how could you book a tournament like this in New Japan without him? Because he can get an insanely good match out of anybody. And I truly don't know how he does it. Like, I know other wrestlers talk about how creative he is, but he has this magical ability to work with any style of anybody he works against. I thought Sonata was awesome in this match. He is so freaking athletic. Some of the spots they did were really, really nuts. Like, there were a couple times when Sonata went for his finisher and Ishii got out of it, and that when it was the brain buster at the end that finally finished Sonata, I was screaming by that point because I was like, who is gonna pull this off? I think one of the things that I like about Sonata is that, you know, I mean, he's a cardio machine. Like, he can get in there and kind of like stay at the same level of intensity throughout a match. But one of the things that's sort of like a deficit, I guess, is that a lot of times you get halfway through a match like this, and I often don't feel anything when I watch him, you know? Mm. Like, you get to a point where he's sort of, because he's maintained that intensity throughout, it becomes difficult to appreciate it when you get to the end. And in this match with Ishii, I did not have that problem at all. And I don't know if it's just that, like, he and Ishii work so well together, or if it's just that thing where Ishii can compensate for anybody's shortcomings, you know, and kind of make them look like a bigger star than they actually are. And that's not to say Sonata's not great. I think Sonata is great, but I think Ishii is just, you know, one of those guys who can make anybody, you know, triple their star power.
Sorry, Karen.
Oh, no, I mean, that was really, like, I thought this was so much fun to watch, and it's such a, like, a complex match when you're watching it, because You can watch it and really enjoy it, but not think about all the components that go into it. And then if you rewatch it, which I watched a little bit more of it, or watched a little bit of it again this morning, I was like, wow, how did they figure out what to do for this specific match? Because I mean, it was clear they wanted it to be like a show stealer, and it was.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying about Sanada. I think that was knock on him when he was a babyface in North America. You know, he was like, he was technically very good, and he was a good babyface. He was Ricky Steamboat, you know, he was that kind of guy, but you kind of got stopped caring about him once the bell rung. You know, he could do all the moves, but there was no anima to what he was doing. And then when he became Cold School Sonata, then everything clicked into place. But you can still find that he's not one dimensional, but his straight aheadness isn't quite snappy there yet. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, I think sometimes, like, I felt this when I was watching him with Kota Ibushi in this tournament, which I loved that match. I thought that match was great. But you get to a point where I sort of need a little more emotion from him than he often seems to either feel comfortable giving, or, like, maybe that's just how he expresses himself and it doesn't fully resonate with me. But, you know, there are times when he's in a match against a guy who is working his ass off, and I'm sort of like, can you meet him halfway? You know, like, it's not enough just for you to be sweaty and handsome. Like, give me something else here. Like, there's just that one, like, little thing missing sometimes. And in this match with Ishii, I didn't feel that at all. It felt very solid all the way through.
I think that we should put that on a t-shirt. It's not enough to be sweaty and handsome.
Is it not?
Well, Christy, you clearly disagree.
Is it not?
What did you think of this match?
Oh, I loved it. This was so great. I was nervous throughout this match, but the good kind of nervous. The nervous about who's going to win instead of the nervous, are they going to kill each other? I think there's been a couple of matches this tournament that I've been sitting there thinking, oh my god, someone's going to die. And I don't like it. But this match was just great. I love Ishii. He's maybe not my personal MVP of the tournament, but if I were looking at it objectively, I think he or Ibushi might be the MVPs of the tournament. He's just had so many great matches, and this was another one. And I actually love that Sonata's been evolving a little bit, his character this tournament, because he's been using other people's moves against them.
Yeah.
The entire tournament, and he's been changing his style a little bit depending on who he's wrestling. And I just love that he can do that. He can show something more. He can show that he can hang with all these people. He can wrestle Zack Sabre Jr. his way, and then wrestle Ishii his way, and then wrestle Kota Ibushi his way. And I think that's good for his characters. I have something that's uniquely him, that he adapts to whoever he's facing. And Ishii is just, wow. there's just something about Ishii staring up at someone with those big eyes of his, and he looks as if he's either confused or insulted that he's not bleeding yet. You know, like, why aren't you hitting me in the face harder? I'm not bleeding yet. I'm not tired. I'm not hurting. Please do more. And I just love that about him.
It was, he reminds me of, to be honest, he reminds me of two people. Mark Rollerball Rocco, just for his straight ahead style and that kind of attitude, who was also the original Black Tiger in New Japan Pro Wrestling. And also, I never saw him wrestle, but my dad used to tell me stories about actually Mark Rocco's dad, who was called Gentleman Jim Hussey, Mr. 5x5, who could deliver a dropkick and land on his feet. And he was just a straight ahead bulldozer of a pro wrestler, and that's who Ishii reminds me of. He's that kind of, and also has that kind of adaptability. Jim Hussey one night wrestled Andre the Giant one night, and the legendary heavyweight, I can't remember his name, George Kidd, the next night, when someone didn't turn up, and George Kidd was a lightweight, he was giving away about £100 to Jim Hussey, and well, not £100, about £50 to Jim Hussey. He said, "I'll wrestle you," and he was like, "You can't wrestle me, you're massive," because this was in the days of lightweights and heavyweights and middleweights. And he was like, "Don't worry, we'll have best of five falls, and I'll give you the first four falls, and we'll do it that way. And they had a thoroughly entertaining match to fill the card out. And it's that kind of adaptability that Ishii has. I know what you were saying about Sanada adapts to stuff, but the way Ishii just borrows moves from people that he's wrestling all the time, like delivering that reverse Frankensteiner against Kenny Omega in the US Championship last year, it's moments like that I noticed from Ishii so much. His ability to say, I can do it if I want to, but I want to wrestle my way, so you'll have to. But yes, just absolutely astounding. Just want to go back a second, because Christy doesn't like Juice Robinson's hair, and I wondered what Chelsea thought of the hair, as we haven't talked about hair yet.
I never expect to like Juice Robinson's hair.
Okay.
I think it works for him. I think it's a good choice for his character. But in terms of, do I like that particular aesthetic? It's not my taste. But I think it works for him. I think it's a good choice for his character.
No love for Juice's
dress. I do like, I mean, it's his look and it fits him, but I just don't like white guys with dreads. Sorry.
That's okay. Just
neither do I.
Oh, there you
neither
go.
Neither do I.
Okay. We'll have to ask the others on Saturday if we get a chance to speak to them all. Right then. Moving on to the next match, Zack Sabre Jr. defeating Tetsuya Naito in 18 minutes and 17 seconds in an absolutely barnstorming match that literally made people cry. It was that good. This was obviously the moment that Tetsuya Naito went out of the G1, and the Los Ignorables fans were aghast that the scrappy young man from Britain would defeat their hero. Christy, what did you think of this?
People were crying.
Yes.
Kevin Kelly kept talking about this poor woman behind him who was sobbing that Naito had lost. I love this match. I love them together. I think they're both very entertaining. Naito is just this perfect shithead who's annoying, and Zack is such a spoiled, entitled little brat about everything. They started out this match with Naito trying to avoid Zack, and Zack getting more and more annoyed. And it was just a perfect example of the characters they've been this tournament. It's kind of hilarious to see for me that Zack is just so perfect now at being that Suzuki Gun asshole, basically. Yeah. He gets so angry when he loses, like a pissed off little child, you know? Like, oh my god, how could I lose? I'm way better than these guys. I should have won. And then you've got Suzuki Gun, who fosters this character perfectly. He's their little beloved crown prince, you know? Taka supports him in everything. Desperado dotes on him. Even Suzuki seems to really, really love him. And it just makes for a great heel. And it's also supported by his amazing skill, because you know that he is so, so dangerous in every way. And then when it doesn't work out, he just acts like a child. And I loved it. I also love that New Japan sees so much in him, because they allowed him to take out the most popular wrestler on the roster. Yet again.
Twice within 12 months. In fact, twice within 3 months.
Yeah.
Yeah, unreal. Absolutely unreal. I will say how much Taka Michinoku was added as well to Zack Sabre Jr. You know, as a hype man, as a corner man, they are a complete package. And for Zack to win with the Zack driver as well kind of hammers home how much Taka's important has been to Zack's rise in this tournament. Chelsea, what did you think of it?
I love this match. I have to say, I think Zack Sabre Jr.'s promos about how much he hates Naito are one of my favorite things that he does. I mean, one time he cut a promo that keeps getting retweeted that I see all the time, where he talks about how much he hates the fact that Naito wears hats. And it's just so fucking brilliant. I love that Zack Sabre Jr., like Christy was saying, he's this very entitled, bratty, vicious heel character who hates losing. You know, he's a little bit like Draco Malfoy, if Draco Malfoy were actually dangerous. and he finds Naito so annoying. And it's really, it's really intelligent character work, because not just because Naito is supposed to be a little annoying, but also because I think, you know, like, I mean, Zack does so many things that are so bratty and annoying to his opponents, and I feel like the thing he hates about Naito is something he sees in himself, and it just, it, to me, that's just, I love that. I love that energy between the two of them. And Zack can say in promos how much he hates Naito and hates wrestling Naito, and how his goal in life is to make sure he eliminates Naito from the tournament, but when you watch the two of them in the ring together, they love wrestling each other.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they have so much fun. This match was 18 minutes long, and I was shocked when I saw that timestamp, because it did not feel like 18 minutes at all. It was so brilliantly paced, and there are moments in it that are breathtaking. Like, when Zack countered the Gloria, I was like, oh my god, really? And then he drags Naito back into another mat wrestling match. And I think the best moment in it is probably the gifable one that that Zack retweeted, where he snatches Naito out of the Tranquilo pose. And, you know, who's Tranquilo now, dickhead? I was like, when Zack is mean, like really, really mean, I just love him so much. I'm like, you are a perfect little rage machine, and I could watch you beat the crap out of anybody. I thought this match was insanely good, and I think if you have to take out your most popular wrestler, like Christy was saying, if you have to take out Naito, who means so much to fans, you have to do it in a way where he not only gets to have a really good showing, but also it sets him up for, at some point, if Naito and Zack have another match in 2 or 3 months, and Naito defeats him, it's going to be a big victorious moment where you're like, okay, he finally got one over on the guy who took him out of the G1 and prevented him from making the final.
Yeah.
And I am really looking forward to that, because I know that New Japan is smart enough to give us that moment eventually, or at least I hope they are. I mean, I know they're going to give us more matches between these two, because how could you not? But I hope that at some point Naito is going to get one over on Zack. And then, you know, there'll be all this fun possible aftermath between Suzuki Gun and LIJ coming for each other, which just sounds like a party to me.
I mean,
any time you want to do that feud, any iteration of that feud, I'm here for it. I'll show up. I'm like, yes, please, get me some popcorn. I really love this match. I think this match is such intelligent character work, and it sets up so many cool things moving forward. And my only thing I guess I feel sad about is, I'm like, when is Naito going to get his moment? When is that finally going to happen for him? You know, because he lost at Wrestle Kingdom, and I'm still really kind of sad about it. And I get that they had to do that. I get that they had to do that because if he finally does win, you know, if they have a second one or a third one and he finally does win eventually, it's going to be this big, amazing moment. But I'm just a little sad, I guess, because as a Naito fan, I want to see him get that. I feel like he's earned it.
He'll get there. I'm sure he will.
I hope so.
One feud I want to see, just as a dream booking moment thing, I want to see Zack Sabre Jr. versus Cody. Because I think those two will do something really cool together. But
well, he was Cody's indie debut.
Yeah. That's a good... I want to... Yeah, Karen, sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, it wasn't very good. So you're saying you want to see it now.
I want to see it now. Now Cody has established himself and he's got his groove. I want to see that match. Just because I think it will be an interesting clash of styles. I think Zack's style works with anyone, but Cody's doesn't necessarily. Because Cody is spot heavy, and that's nothing wrong with that. And it's not even like spot heavy, like Kota Ibushi spot heavy. It's everything is predetermined set things he does, and there's nothing wrong with it. Bret Hart made a 20-year career out of it, and he's one of the greatest wrestlers of all time. However, you know, it only works necessarily with some guys. It doesn't necessarily work with everybody, but it would work really well with Zack Sabre Jr. And I want to see that match, as well as the bratty characterness. I think would match up together.
Oh my god, they would both be such jerks.
Yeah. I was just saying on promos, I love Zack Sabre Jr. as a promo guy. Just for the first promo I ever heard him cut, which was at King of Trios in 2011, I think, which was the simplest promo ever, which was, I'm going to win the opening round with an armbar, and then I'm going to win the semi-final with an armbar, and then I'm going to win the final with an armbar. And that was it. That was his promo. And it just made me laugh so much.
Well, talking about promos, though, he's been doing promos on Suzuki. Have you already heard?
No, I've not heard them yet.
His backstage comments, he was talking about... Well, no, Naito was doing that, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Naito was talking about how he wants to wrestle Zack Sabre Jr. because he's so much better than Suzuki.
Winding
so
up Minoru.
So Naito is going to get his arm broken off or something.
Well, they are due for a Rev Pro tour, and Minoru Suzuki is the current Rev Pro UK champion. So maybe they were angling towards something there. They do lay up so much stuff for even other promotions as well. Because it was like...
Also, the backstage comments, you absolutely have to listen to them. Because they always reveal something about what's going to happen.
There you go. I don't always get time. And I should have done really before this one, because I've had time to do it, but I've been busy with
Chrissy,
other things.
I just assume if it's going to be important, I'll find it on your Twitter.
Yes. I've gifted.
All right, then. We should move on to the main event of this particular evening, which was Kenny Omega versus Kota Ibushi. 23 minutes and 13 seconds. Winner takes all for B Block. And Kota Ibushi won the match. And it was absolutely phenomenal, as we expected. And they didn't kill each other. They left something on the table so they can kill each other next time. Chelsea, what did you think of this match?
Oh, my God. I wasn't ready. I thought I was ready, and I wasn't ready. Okay. So this is intense. There is so much character work stuffed into this match, and it's impossible to say exactly how much of it they planned and how much of it is just those guys being two of the best when it comes to this kind of stuff. You will have all the feelings in this match watching it. Very early on, you know, they grapple with each other a little bit, and they end up going up against the ropes, and it looks like a hug, you know, like a really gentle embrace between the two of them before they get back into it. And, like, there's so many little moments like that where they're just, like, teasing at the depth of their affection for each other in little moments where they're supposed to be fighting each other. And then, you know, of course, you also get these moments where, like, Ibushi kicks out of the power slam and then moonsaults onto Kenny, and Kenny gets his knees up, and it's this very big, you know, kind of like gutting beat in the story, because Kota looks so, you know, so sad and also so like he's in pain, and he sells it really well, and Kenny goes for the you can't escape, and just like they do all their greatest hits against each other, but when they sell them, there's like this level of despair there that is, I don't know, like it took me two tries to watch this match all the way through. And it wasn't because I wasn't enjoying it. It was because it made me feel so much that I had to, like, give myself a second to process it.
Wow.
I don't feel that way very often when I watch either of these two. I mean, I love them, but normally I sit down for a Kenny Omega main event and I'm going to watch that thing all the way through. You know, Ibushi's the same way. I think they did leave something on the table. I think, for me, the story in this match is that, or the biggest story in this match is that there are moments where Kota seems like he wants to hurt Kenny so that he can win and get to the end and accomplish this dream, because, you know, Kota's very ambitious and he's very competitive, and lately he's been restraining himself a little so that he can be part of Kenny's entourage and support Kenny being champion and fit in with the Bullet Club and all that stuff. And he has these moments in the match where he almost looks like he feels guilty, because he's like, I care about you so much, but I have to beat the crap out of you so that I can get to this thing that is my end goal that is so important to me. And they tell that story so well. They exhausted me by the time I got to the end of this, but I also wanted more. And that's really, really, really hard to do.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't think I will ever get tired of watching these two wrestle each other. I mean, this was 23 minutes. It felt longer because it's so dense. It's not dense in like an impenetrable way. It's just there's so many layers to everything that like it was a little mind blowing to me how much stuff they fit into this match.
Yeah. This is kind of like Tolstoy wrestling, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's pro wrestling if Tolstoy had written it. That's what it's really around.
Yes.
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 It's thick and heavy and important, and you should watch it and enjoy it. But, you know, War and Peace is still going to take you a long while to get through.
Yeah.
Christy, what did you think of this?
Oh, well, these two together are always going to be amazing. From the moment they walked out, and you saw that Matt and Nick Jackson let them walk out without them, I think that was really important because it's about them. It's not so much about the Bullet Club Elite. It's about Kota and Kenny, and they were there. And Nick was kind of there to support Kota because he was in the neutral corner. But it was about Omega versus Ibushi.
Mm.
And it started out almost like they were afraid. They didn't want to hurt each other. So it was grappling. It was throwing a couple of kicks. And then at one point, Ibushi was going to jump to the outside. And it looked like Kenny was going to catch him. And then he didn't, and the entire crowd gasped, like it was some sort of betrayal. Like, this opponent didn't catch his enemy during this match.
Yes.
How dare he? Just because it was Kenny and Ibushi.
Yeah.
It was like a betrayal. No, Kenny is supposed to love Kota. He's supposed to catch him, even though this is a match. And then they got more violent, but there wasn't a point that I thought they were really going to hurt each other until they went to the top rope a couple of times, and then I got nervous. But like Chelsea said, I do think that there's something left on the table. I think it's also maybe a good thing that this was at the Budokan, so they couldn't go to the balcony and do any crazy spots. And maybe that was intentional. I don't know. It definitely leaves room for future things. And I think the story is... It's just so much. There's so much emotion, so many feelings behind everything. I'm also really glad that Ibushi won. Because like Chelsea said, Ibushi's been holding back a bit. And people have been putting him in the... Kenny Omega's boyfriend, partner, or whatever category.
Yeah.
And I think Ibushi winning showed that he's still his own person, his own wrestler, and he's still going to beat Kenny Omega every time. Because that's always been the story, that Kenny could never quite surpass Ibushi.
Mm.
Ibushi was always ahead of him. And I like that they kept that going, even though Kenny is champion that right now.
Yeah, if you follow Effing Boring on Twitter...
I do.
She did an advanced history lesson on the Golden Lovers and their relationship going into this match, and it's well worth a read. She go find her. She's really, really cool. And she did a full storyline of going back to the history and the relationship between Kenny and Kota, and how, essentially, back in DDT, it was Kota who was the star and Kenny was the tag-along boyfriend. And how things have switched and changed. There was obviously some consultation that the Golden Lovers would break up at this particular point, but that probably wouldn't happen for one thing, because New Japan don't plan like that. They don't just break up tag teams because they want to. This isn't the WWE. There's also the fact that you've got Tag League coming up in November and December, and watching the Golden Lovers in Tag League will be something else to see for certain. So we'll see how that develops. I would actually, that might be your final. Guerrillas of Destiny versus Golden Lovers. That could be something else to watch. But anywho. But yeah, that ended the match for that particular night, and it rounded up the final numbers as this. Tariano on 6, Tamatanga on 6, Juice Robinson on 6, Hiroki Goto on 6, Tomohiro Ishii was on 10, Sanada was on 8, Tetsuya Naito, Zack Sabre Jr., Kenny Omega and Kota Ibushi all finish on 12, but because Kota had beaten more people out of the tiebreak, he was the one that went to the final with Hiroshi Tanahashi for the G1 climax. Now, we will talk about that in our next show, but I wanted to have a quick chat about numbers, because Budokan looked pretty full for these two shows, the Block A night from the night before with Okada and Tanahashi, and this night, was it a good move going to Budokan?
Oh, you're saying was it a good move that they did this match at Budokan?
They did the last three nights at Budokan. From a financial point of view, they seem to have filled the place, and it seems to have looked good on TV. But it was kind of like when they announced it, it seemed ambitious, but certainly doesn't seem that way now. Would you agree?
I mean, I think Budokan always seems to have a really large, enthusiastic crowd. So I hope it did good numbers for them. I don't know how many tickets they sold, but it didn't feel like there was anything missing being in that venue. And I know that being there is something that is really significant emotionally to the wrestlers. So I think that was a good call.
I was just looking at the numbers, 12,023. For the Block B night on that night with Kota and Kenny, and I'm just looking on the previous night, 6,180 for Tanahashi versus Okada. So they were about 5,000 down on the first night. So that's interesting, certainly, but they certainly made the numbers up over the weekend, and I don't think they would lose money. Of course, also as well, that announcement for the New Japan Ring of Honor Supercard at Madison Square Garden was announced that weekend too. That's going to be something special, and we've been talking about it in our production chat. Chelsea, what do you think they can do at Madison Square Garden? Can Ring of Honor and New Japan steal some thunder from NXT?
I don't necessarily know if I think of it as stealing thunder from NXT. I think it'll be a really good show. I think the thing that... So, okay, I have complicated feelings about Madison Square Garden as a venue when you go to a wrestling show anyway. And the thing is this, right? Unless you're somebody who can always afford front row tickets at, like, a WWE show, Madison Square Garden is such an expensive venue to run shows in, and the ticket prices are usually so high that oftentimes I end up sitting far enough back, even if I'm sitting in, like, the middle of the bowl or I'm on the floor but I'm at the back of the floor, that, like... there's this level of removal from the wrestling that I'm watching because it's so far away from me and because there are so many security barriers that I'm like, okay, I'm in Madison Square Garden and I'm supposed to feel really excited about that, but I wish we were at, like, the Hammerstein Ballroom instead. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I can see where you're coming from.
I think that's more commentary on the venue than New Japan and Ring of Honor itself, but it'll be really interesting to see what the wrestlers are able to bring to this building where, like, I don't think, has Ring of Honor ever been able to do a show in Madison Square Garden before?
No one has done a wrestling show at Madison Square Garden since the 40s other than WWE or the McMahon family.
I mean, that's going to be emotionally significant enough for all of them that I'm sure they're going to give us something really special. I think the New York scene right now is so hot, and there are so, so many wrestling fans, and there are so many people who didn't care about wrestling maybe necessarily so much a few years ago, or, like, they watched it as kids and they kind of got out of it and now they're back invested in it. Like, I see so many shows in the New York area that I wouldn't expect to sell out. Selling out, or if they're not selling out, they're drawing really big crowds. So I feel like it's the right time for them to be running that show, because if there's any market that can support a big show like that in a big, fancy, expensive venue, it's, you know, like, it seems to be the right combination of things at the right time.
But I was gonna say they sold out Honor Club tickets in less than a minute. So the first reserve of tickets went less than a minute. Just like All In did. So I mean, I think as well, from a wrestler's point of view, especially a Japanese wrestler's point of view, Madison Square Garden is a big deal. You know, Ultimo Dragon's request upon signing with the WWE was that he wanted to wrestle in Madison Square Garden. He didn't necessarily even want to do anything else. That's the only reason, one of the reasons why he signed with WWE was that he'd get to wrestle in Madison Square Garden. And they did it for him on his debut, which was cool of them. Yeah, I think it's going to be a big deal for New Japan Pro Wrestling. It's certainly a massive deal for Ring of Honor. Christy, have you got any thoughts on this?
Well, as Square Garden doesn't really do anything for me, because I don't travel to the United States, so I don't even really think about it. But I do like what it means for New Japan, the historical value, doing something that only WWE has been doing the last decades. And also what it means for the fans that will be able to go. So I love what it represents, even if it doesn't really represent anything for me, personally.
That pretty much covers everything for the G1 Climax Block Nights. And I'd like to thank my guests today, Ms. Chelsea Spollen, shoulders up. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
You can find her at Chelsea Comics on Twitter, but more likely at Shoulders Up, where she will be talking about wrestling a lot. And also, you can find Christy. Thank you very much for your time as well.
It was really fun. Thank you.
That's okay. You can find her at Smark Infested on Twitter. You can also find her at Wrestling Sexism and at New NJPW GIFs. I got it right?
Yes.
Yes, and NJPW GIFs. You can find the show at Troopany Show on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook, The Troopany Show, and on Patreon, where you can help keep The Troopany Show free forever for everyone. Quick plug, this month's Total Wrestling Magazine has a front cover about All In, and it was written by me, which is my first magazine front cover, so I'm incredibly proud of it. So if you go, please go buy it, because that will make my editor really happy, and it'll make me really happy.
That's awesome, James. Congrats.
Thank you very much. I looked at the history of wrestling in Chicago, what the Young Bucks and Cody Rhodes did, and what they're trying to do with the show. And we also looked at the biggest independent non-WWE shows in the world over the last 20 years. So I hope you enjoy that article. Take care, and we'll see you soon. Bye.